Welcome to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete Sunshine 96.7 FM. Join us as we celebrate the sparks that ignite, the events that inspire, and the songwriters that create. With your host, Steve Robb.
Aubrey Wallet is a native Floridian who now splits her time between the Tampa area and Nashville, where she earlier worked on the business side of the industry for one of the top songwriters, Dallas Davidson. While in Nashville pursuing her own music career, she also earned a music business degree at Belmont University. Since then, Aubrey's been touring all over the U.S. and has opened up for country artists such as Tanya Tucker, Billy Currington, Hunter Hayes, and Winona Judd, and opened for Jay Leno on his comedy tour in 2018. Aubrey's single, Saltwater Gypsy, won 2019 Music Video of the Year for the International Singer-Songwriter Association Awards, and she's also been nominated for Trop Rock's Female Artist of the Year. Aubrey Wallet, welcome to Song Creating.
Hello. Hey, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So I've got to ask for everybody listening who may not have a beach anywhere near them, define Trop Rock for our listeners, if you could.
Okay, so from what I believe, Trop Rock was created, obviously it's a lot of Jimmy Buffett Parrothead fans, but they call it Trop Rock because it's Jimmy Buffett, tropical music, and a mix of like Eagles sound. So that's where Trop Rock, the name came about, I guess.
Okay, so it's got that island flair with a little rock and roll.
Yes, definitely. Okay. Lots of beach and then, yeah, a little bit of rock and roll.
But reggae doesn't qualify in there, right?
Reggae, I mean, there's some reggae artists. We've had a couple at some of the festivals. So it's more of a lifestyle. And then the artist at least has to have one beach song. Then you're qualified.
I like that. It's a lifestyle. That's
yes. You have to like the beach. And then if you're an artist, you have to write a song about the beach at least.
You got to live the life. Oh, that's nice. Awesome. So were you born and raised in Florida?
I was. I grew up in Dunedin, Florida.
Oh, went to Dunedin High School and all of that?
Dunedin Middle, Dunedin High School, Go Falcons. Oh, yeah.
So I know Dunedin, but a lot of our listeners may not. Dunedin is a town with some Scottish heritage, and it has actually pipe bands or bagpipe bands in the curriculum. Did you play in one of those?
Oh, yeah. I did not play in those. I was in chorus, but I was around a lot of the band musicians and I think the middle school, our mascot is the Highlanders, Dunedin Middle Highlanders, which is like the Scottish, like pipe band people. Yeah.
Do you have any Scottish? Have you found your clan? Do you have any Scottish heritage?
I do not. But I feel like being from Dunedin, you kind of like claim that.
Yeah, you do. There's a lot of that here. And I'm actually interviewing you from Dunedin, where I happen to be for for a couple of months in the wintertime before. And in a few days, I head back to New England, which I could say cold New England, but it's not really all that cold. come April. So anyway, so yeah, I know the town well, and I have seen you here performing, which is where I met you the first time. And there's a lot of opportunities for musicians around here to perform and just keep fresh. And it's amazing. Yes. I mean, you're gigging all the time here.
Yeah, my life as an artist flip-flopped because I graduated high school and then I originally went to West Florida in Pensacola and was there for musical theater. Because I did a lot of musical theater in high school because it was a way for me to sing. I was in choir and my choir teacher told me to try out for the musicals and I ended up getting some of the parts, like the lead parts there. And I was trying to figure out how to go to school for music and musical theater. They had a program that I got accepted in Pensacola. So started there and then moved to Nashville right away. Was really eager to, I found out you could go to school for commercial music and music business and the country music scene. And that's what I really wanted to do, but I didn't know that that was even possible. And so that's what brought me to Nashville. And then I spent 7 years there full time, and it kind of ended up being a little bit of a blessing. But long story short, I was supposed to be on one of the seasons of The Voice, which I actually, a lot of people don't even know this. And I had to end my lease in Nashville to be out in California for a couple months to go back and forth to do the filming part. I wasn't on the TV part, so no one even knows. That's why I don't really even say that I was on some of the preseason part. But I didn't have a place to go back to in Nashville, and that's what brought me to Florida right before COVID year. And because I needed to like regroup. And then I found this, obviously, I don't know why I was so fast to leave this beautiful area in the Tampa Bay, the whole St. Pete and Tampa Bay, Clearwater, Dunedin area. And there's so many places to gig and make money as a musician. And so I never really left to go back to Tennessee. And here I am.
There you are. Okay.
Like, this weather is way better. Why did I leave this place?
You know, though, that people are going to now know about your voice experience.
That's okay. I never really talked about it because I felt like there was no proof on TV. So I'm like, oh, well, like, it's a story for my memory. But I do have pictures to prove it. And maybe I'll start sharing that online. And obviously now they have this. It's the first time I'm admitting it on any public thing.
You heard it here first, everybody.
You heard it here first.
So sounds like you went almost from high school. How much time did you spend in, or did you go to college in Pensacola, or did you go right to Belmont?
2 years. I did my general studies, which for any young artist, go get your general studies done somewhere else other than the most expensive school that is like special for music or arts and whatever. I didn't actually get into the program when I originally auditioned for the musical theater program at Belmont. So I still didn't really know much about the commercial voice business stuff there. And I didn't get in, and I was like, oh, like, dang it. So then I was like, whatever, it's not meant to be. So that's what brought me. I got into the West Florida one. And then I'm super stubborn, and that's what's made me last this long, I think, because I'm like, you know what? I think I'm going to transfer. And I tried out for the commercial program, still didn't get in to that program. And I was like, okay, I kept making deals with myself. And I was like, you know what? I don't need a piece of paper to tell me I can sing and make a living. And I went to school for the business part of it for music. And now I'm forever grateful for that, because then I knew how to work my own business as a musician and could do both. And that's another tip for any other young artist: go for like the business side of it, so you don't have to count on anybody else and you can do it on your own.
I'll bet. It is, you know, whether you're actually doing the business part of it yourself or not, at least knowing when someone might be taking advantage of you is
totally a good thing.
Wow. Yeah. So you got your degree at Belmont University, mm-hmm. in music business or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then went to work on the business side of things there?
I did. Yeah. So while I was in school, part of being in the business side of things is you are supposed to intern at a lot of the industry places. So I started out at a label, independent label, and then I learned how to work on the radio and promote it for like the newer artists. And then I had interviewed with a couple like publishing companies because I had really gotten into songwriting, and I wanted to learn more about how these songwriters are in Nashville. They're the most successful ones. Mm-hmm. And no one knows about them most of the time, unless they're a public figure. And so I was curious about that, interviewed at a couple, and ended up at working for this number one songwriter, Dallas Davidson. And it was funny because on the interview day, I was interviewing all over Music Row. And I went into this one, and he had his own publishing company that he had just started. And he was, I think he had just written one of Luke Bryan's like big hits, and but it wasn't, social media wasn't as popular either. This was like 2011, I think. And so I didn't really, he didn't say his name. So I walked into the office and I saw all these awards and like BMI signs and all these things. And I'm like, and Luke Bryan pictures. And I'm like, am I in like country music heaven? I'm like, what is this? And anyway, I met with his like assistant or manager to interview, and he kind of told me a little bit about him. So I'm like mid interview going, oh my gosh, like I feel like I'm not prepared for this. And this is like a crazy cool opportunity. And then I think there's two other guys he writes with that are popular called the Peach Pickers, which they've opened up for Luke Bryan on his farm tour. So Rhett Akins, who has the My Truck in Her Drive, that like 90s popular song, he's a big songwriter. He walks in, and then the other Peach Picker, Ben Haislip, who's another number one songwriter, walks in. And I'm like looking at these people, knowing now I know who they are. And the manager ended up calling me later that day, and they said that I just seemed very, I guess, chill for all these like famous people walking in. And I'm glad it appeared to be that way. And they ended up giving me the job, and I stayed there for almost like over 3 years. And it was the best experience and opportunity I could have ever gotten there, for sure.
Wow. So I have to ask, did you have an opportunity at all to do any writing with them?
So I didn't write with them. I, you know, and it's, for me, I also wanted them, I think that's why I stayed, they wanted me to stay so long, and they wanted to keep me on, but I kind of told them like, I wanted to try on my own without, you know, asking for help, and I want to learn my own way. And, you know, I kind of separated that was there for like business. I wanted them to trust me that I would never ask them for anything or expect anything from them. And I feel, looking back, I think hopefully I like kept, I still have a lot of my friends in the business network, and my name is not tainted, I don't think, because I was that way. I separated it where I was still playing music and writing on the side, but I never expected, I was around so many people at the top of the industry, and I wanted them to know that I'm trying to pave my own way, being the young artist and the new artist, and not expecting people to hand it to me. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, it was, it's, there's many times where I'm like, man, I wish I could go in there and hop in. Cause you know, cause you would hear them like write, and you know, I got to see how a number one song started from them walking in with their coffee thinking, oh man, how do I write Country Girls Shake It for Me? Which, you know, or Boys Around Here was one that I actually got to really see all the way to the celebration of the award show or award celebration. Wow. For the writers. And
that's the Blake Shelton tune, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I got to sing on the demo of that, and my boss, Dallas Davidson, his voice, they kept his track because they do like a demo of it the day that they write sometimes. And, you know, people will kind of make fun of that song, but I saw them create it and I laugh because I go, number one, they are all laughing their way to the bank because they wrote a number one song that was like killer all over the country. And then they were chewing tobacco and drinking beer and they drive their trucks and like, you know, so people are like, oh, that's like such a silly song. And I'm like, honestly, these Georgia boys literally were living what they were singing, and they were having a blast writing it. They weren't trying to, they were like, this is going to be a funny, like stupid, like redneck song. Yeah. And they like called me over in the room they're writing, and they're like, everyone sings in Nashville, your dentist, your cashier at the grocery store, and your intern, which was me at the time. And they're like, you probably sing, like, can you sing background vocals on this? Cause we need like some chick, like voices on it. And I did. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this is crazy. But it was so cool to see it, like them pitch it to different artists, and they wanted it to be Blake's. And they, luckily their relationships and how big they were in the city, they could send it to him directly. And then him cutting it, and then, you know, going to radio, watching on the charts. Like, my job was like keeping track of all of his songs that were on the charts, and then going to the celebration to see it full circle, and then seeing it in a stadium. And that was really, it's awesome to see. We all see it on the radio, and the once it's big, when everyone acknowledges it, but it was so special to see it create out of thin air, you know.
That's where music magic. Is created out of thin air.
It was magic.
You know, I've had a number of Nashville artists on who are in the songwriting part of it. And it's really interesting to hear, you know, someone who's actually witnessed all of that whole trajectory of a song from the business aspect of it. We can have a whole another podcast, but we don't want to talk about all of that.
I know.
We want to talk about Aubrey Wallet and your songwriting.
Yes.
Which started when?
Well, when I was 12, my chorus teacher in Dunedin Middle, I wonder if he's still there, Mr. Zelenak. I hope if he hears this, I hope he hears that shout out. He encouraged me a lot to be in chorus. And then there was a Pinellas County BMI songwriter competition to write two songs. And so I did. And there was no winner. You just got to perform. I think there was like four of us who got to perform our songs with the band.
This is it. At the age of 12?
Yeah. I honestly, great. looking back, when I was 12, I thought I had it going on. I was like, oh, I got this life under control. Like, I wish I could go back and bring some of that crazy faith that I had, confidence. Yeah, I wrote a song called Small Town Boys. That was my like country song. And then, and my up-tempo. And then my ballad was, I'm going to find someone to love me. And anyway, yeah, I don't really play those out. They're not online anywhere, I don't think. Who knows? Like, I hope they're not.
you can always go back if you've got the bones of a good song, even at the age of 12. Go back and just edit it a little bit.
It's true. Small Town Boys is kind of catchy. I've done it a few times at my live shows when someone knows about it. And every time I do sing like the chorus, I'm like, dang, that was pretty catchy. I've always been really into melodies and like hooks of things. That's one of my favorite things about songwriting.
Yeah. It sounds like by these titles that you were kind of into the country music scene.
Oh, early. Yeah. Yeah, I definitely, that was the one thing. My dad always took me to school growing up early, and that was the only thing we could agree upon listening to on the radio was country music. I wanted to, like, you know, listen to some like pop music and be like the cool kid, and he was like, no. But country, no. He would let me listen to.
Yeah, figure out what we agree on. Let's uh-huh. do that. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. How did the lyric writing come for you? Were you a poetry kid also, or more on the music side?
Yeah, I wasn't, to be honest, I wasn't like a poet kid. I think I was more introverted, and I still am more introverted than some people think I am. I take in a lot of things, and I've always been like a journal kid. I would like write about my feelings or the best day I had or worst day, or that was like my venting session. So I think that's why I also fell in love with country music, because I felt like it was like stories.
Exactly.
And to me, they were like journal entries. And then my melodies were just, I think I was always more of like a vocalist, or I'd always sing and hum around the house or just think of things. So, you know, I think I had them separate, journaling and then singing. And then I finally realized, you know, oh, you can kind of put something together and see what happens. And there's no rules.
Yeah. I think guitar is your primary instrument.
It is. Yes.
Did you learn that at an early age or later?
No. So I feel kind of spoiled because I grew up with my mom playing piano and singing, and that's where I kind of got my music from, my voice from. And then my dad plays guitar, and they both were worship leaders in church growing up. So I watched them a lot. And so it was always around music. And then my older brother, he played guitar, started playing guitar in college. So then I was, when he would come home, I was like, we would play at Dunedin Brewery and the open mics there. And I just thought it was, you know, I love my dad, but when I was in middle school and high school, it wasn't cool to play with my dad. So I was like, I'm going to play with my brother at a bar. And that's so cool. And so, you know, sometimes we'd play, I had like three original songs at the time that I'd play out, or we'd just do covers. And so it was kind of a family thing. And I counted on them for all of that. Then I moved to Nashville and I would mess around with guitar, but it wasn't like my, like, it wasn't as natural. And then when I moved to Nashville, I realized you had to pay for musicians to play with you if you're going to be out. And I was a college kid and I'm like, I can't pay you guys. I'm like, Dad, what do I do? Like, can you come up here? Like my brother, I'm like, can you move here, please? And so I just started learning from YouTube and, you know, taking some advice from my dad when I would listen and kind of figured it out on my own and trial and error.
So you really didn't start playing guitar till you had already moved to Nashville?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's one thing when some people tell me they're about to start playing guitar, I'm like, just keep playing, because it's going to sound bad when you first play. Yeah. Like you got to just get over it, you know?
Yeah. My daughter learned on her own, and I was teaching guitar, and I don't think she had any thoughts at all of taking guitar lessons from dad. So all of a sudden, mm-hmm. I find she's in her bedroom learning on YouTube, and comes out and starts playing, and also wrote some really, really great songs. She hardly plays anymore at all, and in fact, she gave me back the guitar I gave her for college graduation.
No,
It's like, oh no.
Well, you know,
I got to make a suggestion to you. I think your bio though should really start with singing in bars since the age of 15. Aubrey Wallet. You know, I mean, the cred that gives you is, you know, you can't put a dollar figure on that.
That's true. Before I could drink.
you've kind of entered into this trop rock sound after coming back to Florida, it sounds like. And the Saltwater Gypsy, mm-hmm. I think, also kind of fits into that mold, that genre. And I know that's, I believe that's on the cap that you wear, your cowboy hat's got Saltwater Gypsy.
Yes.
On it, right? So this is,
yes,
this is one of your signature songs. Now, without going too much into another song, what's Saltwater Gypsy? What's the gist of that one?
Yeah, I was, you know, I'd kind of always been writing from my like Florida roots or my beach roots. And so Saltwater Gypsy, I was living in Nashville, but trying to play shows everywhere outside of it because they pay a lot more outside of Nashville. And so I would drive to Pensacola. And so it was, you know, the song I wrote with one of my girlfriends up in Nashville. And I said, I was obsessed with the title and kind of actually rewrote it like three different times. But it's about being an independent artist. I was single at the time. And so it was kind of a free life of trying to book my shows by the water. So in my mm-hmm. mind, it's like me with my guitar, just jumping to beach, playing music and trying to live the life I sing about and that I love. And yeah, it's one of my favorite.
So this song was prompted. You had the title first before anything else, it sounds like.
I did. Yeah. And I don't know what made me think of it. I can't remember, but I had it written down and I kept rewriting it. And I finally found the one that I liked, the version that I liked.
Yeah. Well, how many versions do you think you went through?
So three different ones. Yeah.
Yeah. All kind of in the same feel, or did you really?
Kind of. Yeah. No, it was all pretty laid back kind of mm-hmm. melody thing. The first one, I mean, I don't even know if I finished the first one. I probably, honestly, I was like, this, I don't like this. The second one was a little more like story, like of a gypsy life, kind of focused on that. And then, I don't know, I wanted more like beach, and you close your eyes and you drink a margarita and you feel like you're just kind of cruising around the water. That's what I wanted.
You knew this song was going to be you were going to make this by hook or by crook.
I wanted to make it. Yeah. I wanted to make, I still want to. I'm like, this song, I hope, you know, a good song can, it can like last forever. So I'm always trying to push this song, because I think, you know, everyone has their songs, are like your children. You have your favorites. Mm-hmm. You can't tell them. This is definitely one of mine. And I think as a brand, like there's a wine actually made after the song in Thomasville, Georgia. Some of my family lives there. My future, I've trademarked it and everything, and want to keep making like a clothing brand with it. So it's definitely one of my favorites.
So when you were touring, how does that get put together with the whole course of the thing with musicians and comics?
So it was, I opened up for him in Ohio, and my husband's family lives there, and it was kind of one of those scenarios that you ask and you never know if they're going to say yes. And they actually said yes. And kind of shooting for the stars, and then end up working. So it was one show in Youngstown, Ohio, at the theater. And I just opened up for him acoustically. And it was one of my, I'll never forget that show. And it was probably the coolest thing I've ever done. And he was the nicest, like, coolest person I've also met that's in his like tier of fame.
Yeah.
He came out to watch my sound check and to say hi to me and thank you for being here. And I'm like, thanks for letting me in. I'm like, and then I could see side stage. He even watched some of my show also. And I just thought that was, I don't know, that not, I've opened up for a lot of people, and not everyone kind of appreciates the opener. And I feel like I got the sense that he remembers the climb and knows that it doesn't just happen overnight, and appreciates that journey part. And I just really respected that and was surprised. I didn't expect it. So it was
well, you know,
pretty cool.
He comes from Boston, and I used to see him in Boston.
Oh, wow.
When his hair was black, and he looked like,
wow.
Oh my gosh. In fact, he approached me for a commercial. I should rephrase that. I was sitting in a park, and he was interviewing people in the park about the Boston Globe newspaper that he was endorsing. And he had the biggest head and the largest chin on the biggest head I've ever seen. And
oh my god!
He's like right there. But he was always a fun, an interesting guy. But a lot of names too: Billy Currington, Hunter Hayes. I mean, these are. Were you with them for multiple shows or
just one? Some of them I've played for multiple times, but different, not on like the same yearly tour. And that's pretty common, I'd say, especially nowadays with independent artists, like super independent. Not, some people say they're independent, but they like have some sort of deal. But yeah, it was, they've all been amazing experiences, and I feel very lucky.
So to get these, I'm curious, from anybody listening, how are you acquiring these gigs? Are you going out for them?
All different ways.
Yeah.
I feel like you have to be really really creative. Sometimes I used to use my sister-in-law's name as my booking agent, so I would use her email and say I had a booking agent, because I would use her maiden name. And anyway, I would do stuff
like
that.
Make it sound bigger than you were.
Well, it's, you know, unfortunately, and it's funny because it's one of the things to the core for me is hard. Like, I'm not a good liar at all, and that's why I can hide behind an email probably. So I would tell them I got a booking agent. Aubrey's so great. And then I remember one phone call I got from a festival promoter, and my mom was in the car, and she goes, "Oh, is Kristen there?" That's my sister-in-law's name. And I was like, they're like, "We're calling for Aubrey Wallet to talk about her." And it's me answering. And my mom's like, "What?" And I'm like, "Shh," like, "Shush." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, Aubrey's great. Yes, we'll do this amount of money and whatever." And yeah, you just got to fake it till you make it sometimes. It's a circus.
That's great advice.
It's a place where the waves make a rhythm of their own. It's a place that I call home. We take a short bike ride down Bayshore Drive, listen to the radio. Lots of margarita melodies, but the ones that got to me were songs from Tennessee. A little country to remind me why I wear my boots on the beach with neons out. Yeah, they take me back there to the mountain area, from the Blue Ridge to the Smokies. I love the sweet harmonies coming from those Nashville streets. It's the memories left inside of me that makes me wanna wear boots on the beach. Got the DNA of a mermaid, but a little bit of cowgirl too. Well, this southern girl loves both worlds, so I ain't gonna choose. But when I'm looking for a remedy, the only thing that I need fit right onto my feet. When I start to miss it, there's only one fix for it. That's why I wear my boots on the beach with me on down. Yeah, they take me back there to the mountain area, from the Blue Ridge to the Smokies. I love the sweet harmonies coming from those Nashville streets. It's the memories left inside of me that makes me wanna wear boots on the beach. Yeah, they take me back there to the mountain air, from the Blue Ridge to the Smokies. I love the sweet harmonies coming from those Nashville streets. It's the memories left inside of me that makes me wanna wear boots on the beach. Whoa.
Welcome back to Song Creating. We're here with Aubrey Wallet from Dunedin, Florida. So, Aubrey, Dunedin's on the Gulf side of Florida.
Yes.
And do you find there's a difference in the vibe from the Gulf Coast versus the Atlantic Coast in Florida?
Yes. Yeah, we don't surf where we grew up. I feel like our friends in Jacksonville Beach, they surf, and it's a different Florida life. There, every part of Florida is so different. I mean, you go to Miami, you're in a different country. You feel it like Key West is a whole nother vibe, barefoot hippies. And yeah,
I feel those in Dunedin though, I have to tell you.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Florida's also a melting pot. We got a little bit of everything these days.
Yeah, that is true. I don't know how many people are moving here a day, but it's like crazy figure. Yeah. Tell us about this move back from Nashville to Florida and how you finally accepted the fact that Florida was calling to you more than Tennessee was calling to you.
Yeah, you know, I still love both places, and I will always be a little mix of both, even though I'm definitely a Florida girl forever. There's a lot, I think I'll never forget a lot of what I learned as an artist growing up in Nashville and in Tennessee and being around so many amazing creative people. They all really influenced me to be who I am musically as an artist. But deep down, I think my songwriting version of myself is I write from a lot of my life, and I grew up by the water. And so that's where I relate to that, the lifestyle, a lot more. And, you know, it's like now technology these days, it's amazing because I think you can be anywhere and still have, you don't have to be in the city that you're trying to work in, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and I still go back about once a month to a lot of my best friends still live there, and to any other artist that wants to, you know, make a career in songwriting and music, it is really about make the best art with your friends. And I kind of saw that when I worked even on the business side. You know, my boss was writing with all of his best friends. That's where he would write his favorite songs. And for me, a lot of my best friends I went to college with up in Nashville. So that's why I still go up there and record and write. And like my producers, they're all my friends that I've known for a really long time. And that's why I kind of go back and forth. But, you know, living wise, day by day, I feel the most inspired when I'm in warm weather and by the water.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's a little mix of both.
Is this song a co-write?
This song is, yes. Troy Castellano, who I've written a lot of my songs with. And then Terry Hicks was a new writer that was on it. They were kind of buddies. And I had brought this title again to them. I had someone kind of saying it to me around my family. They kept saying, because I would play a show. This is where it happened. I would play a show in 4th of July, and my family all gets together on Bel Air Beach every year. And I would go play a 4th of July show when I wasn't living here full time. And I'd always wear my cowgirl boots. And so he's pretty much like one of my uncles. My uncle's like best friend he's like, boots on the beach. Cause I'd come there and I'd have drinks with everybody after my show. And I'd always wear like my show clothes, like still on the beach. And he was like, boots on the beach. And I was like, dang, that is such a cool thing.
Ding,
and I didn't
ding,
even,
ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. And anyway, so when I wrote it with my buddies, I was like, I don't know how this is going to work, but let me tell you what my real life experience is. Like I literally wear boots like on the sand. And anyway, then we kind of described my life of loving both places. And when I wear my boots, that's when I feel connected to my Tennessee life. But I'm usually walking around Florida.
You know, what I find about this song is that it's not a song that the emotion that you're putting out is happiness about having both places more than being torn.
Like choosing. Them. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's
awesome.
Definitely a positive song. You know, you can, you know, how many of all the songs out there, especially country songs and folk songs that are sad songs.
That are sad. I know.
And, you know, you're torn about, you know, two different, you know, lovers or whatever it is.
Right.
I did find, and you know, it matches, obviously it matches the feeling of the music too, but it's a positive song, and it
yeah,
I guess it in a way is it a way of saying you can have your cake and eat it too? Is that offered?
I'm trying to make my life like that. I don't know if it's truly possible, but right now I feel like, you know, it's at a certain point you try to. I did, and that's, I'm so glad that you kind of got that from the song, because when I first came back here and I, you know, I was torn, but I felt like I had to choose between the two. And I seriously do love both places for very different reasons. And I, you know, traveling back and forth, I'm like, you know what? Like, I don't know why I feel no one's like forcing me to like stay in one or the other. It's kind of up to me. And yeah, that's what the song's about, like trying to live in both places, and they both kind of make me who I am, and don't be sad about wherever I am at that time, whether I am in Nashville to record or write, like be happy there and then be happy when you're in Florida. Cause no one's, I don't have roots. Like I'm not a tree. I can hop on a plane or drive to wherever I want right now, luckily.
So I like this one, where my boots, boots on the beach when the neon's out of reach.
And yes,
man, there is some neon in Nashville.
Yes, it's, oh yeah, and it's true. It's a magical city, and you know, it's funny because when I was living in Tennessee, I was always dreaming and wishing I was in Florida. And then when I'm in Florida, I'm like, man, I have FOMO. What are they doing up in Nashville? Like one of my friends, I'm so jealous. So, you know, that's, yeah, that line's, that's why I'm like, you know what? I got my cowgirl boots. I got my memories, and, you know, book a trip if you're missing it.
So, this kind of locks you into a wardrobe choice that you can't get out of.
Yeah. Boots. Hey, good thing I like them, and they're comfortable. They're better than heels, let me tell you.
Well, I mean, do you ever wear flip-flops?
I do have flip-flops, but you know, it's funny. Someone else asked me this because I always wear closed-toed shoes when I sing. And it's not even like a danger thing. I think I feel like grounded and like in my like performing Aubrey way. Because I've done a show like barefoot, and I feel a little like naked. It feels weird. And
you don't have a whole pedal system, I think, that if I recall.
No, no, I don't.
I've tried playing barefoot with my loop pedal, and boy, you tap that barefoot. It you got to have shoes for that. So
yeah, that's true.
I love playing barefoot. I just sit. I put a little carpet down, and it's just so much more relaxing. I can't stand wearing shoes if I don't have to.
No, see, it's funny. A lot of people kind of tell me, especially in this trap rock world, a lot of them play barefoot, especially the guys. And I don't know, I feel like I'm actually my music self when I'm wearing my boots.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. It is. I mean, it now has come to define you.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. So how many different pairs do you have?
Oh gosh, I have a lot. Okay. I have like the shorty boots, they're uh-huh. called like the ankle boots, and yep. then I got the long ones, I got the knee ones, I got, yeah, I have a lot.
Okay, all right. So the progress of writing this song, do you recall how from the title to the ending here, how it progressed?
Thinking about the title and getting that inspiration, it's funny because I kind of, now that I know who I write with, my friends, I kind of knew I wanted to write with, especially my friend Troy. We actually wrote one of my other songs, Beach Vibes. And so there's certain people that I like know this story is going to like really connect with him, or he's going to help me like piece this together, in a cool way or a good way. And so I was kind of holding it out to get when I was writing with him, like on his rotation. So I kind of knew that. And then we wrote it in a day. Which I also did with Beach Vibes, I wrote like a little bridge, like after, mm-hmm. When I like came back to Florida, and I did that with the other song too. I didn't write a bridge on this one. I think I thought about it, and it's funny because I actually normally am a bridge person, mm-hmm. and I think it's like a vocal thing with me. I've always been intrigued by where it goes melody wise. Yep. But with this one, I think it was more about, I really wanted it to be like focused. I didn't want there to be a torn piece of Aubrey choosing, because that's what I felt like a bridge would have done. And kind of like what you said earlier, I really want it to be like, it's more of a, it is what it is. And I'm happy about having both. Like I'm trying, you know,
yeah, having both at one time. It's a complete song, and it sometimes you just have to stop.
And yeah. Otherwise, if it's not needed, then don't do it.
I think in country, the it seems like the formula for country, at least nowadays, all country's changed so much, is the bridge tends to be a soaring guitar solo.
Yeah, and for
less,
sure.
Less of a vocal thing.
When in doubt, add a guitar solo.
but yours is not really.
No, it's a breakdown chorus.
Yeah. It's actually pretty subtle, and so it's nice that way. Did you have some toss away verses? I mean, could you have?
You know, I don't feel like we did. I felt like, you know, I write with Troy often, and so I think it helps when you know, again, it goes back to like when you write with your friends, you kind of, it's like it ends up being a conversation, and then of course there's. I'm a big fan of like word vomit it on the paper or computer, the lyrics, and then try to go back and like tweak it. I'm pretty sure we started with the chorus first though. And we were like going back and forth with it. Cause you know, there's some songs and I felt like this was one, it could be really cheesy or it could be cool. Mm-hmm. And there was sometimes where I'm looking at it, I'm like, is this stupid? I'm like, I don't know, you know, because sometimes you feel like, oh, like this is the coolest thing. And then you start to think about it in like a fan or a consumer way of listening to it. And you're like, is it cool or is it stupid? I don't know. Yeah. And you kind of just got to keep working at it. And that's why I love co-writing, because you acknowledge, especially with a friend, you can be honest and be like, no, let's like, we can do better than that. Like we're better than that. Or that's kind of cheesy. Like you got to be honest with each other to make it, have both of you like it, you know?
Yeah. For better or for worse, I can see college girls singing this at the top of their lungs.
I hope so.
there's something about it. It may just be me and some of the music I heard when my girls were in college. There's just something, you know, at tailgate parties, there's a certain vibe in the songs that are played. And this just seems like one of them, and it's catchy. And, you know, I think it's actually the fact that you don't have so many lyrics, you've repeated that chorus and, you know, that's something I struggle with is wanting to put too many words in. So the chorus, I don't have enough repeating choruses that people start actually remembering those words by the second or third one. And, you know, it's catchy and it does work. It is memorable. I love the line, I got the DNA of a mermaid. I mean, that's...
Oh, it's my favorite. I was waiting for that to like write that in there. I was sitting on that one. I just didn't know where to put it in the song. But yeah, that's one of my favorite lines.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much say it as it is here, don't you?
Yeah.
All right. That's good. Well, so you've actually got, so the two songs we talked about today, primarily this one, but the other one, you both started from a title, which...
Yeah, that is kind of funny.
Was an unusual way until I started a songwriting retreat that I attend. And that was one of the exercises. We go to write a bunch of titles and then start writing from there. So it's something I, at the time, I'd never thought, you know, I thought you had to write from an emotion and from something else, but sometimes you just need that spark.
Actually, I've always kept a little notepad on my phone of titles. And that's when I go to write with my friends, or I Zoom write a lot too. I kind of try to think of the title and at least bring a title to try to spark something. And I try to say it sometimes. Like I wrote one song for my wedding last year and I had the title and I'm like, I like to see what their inspiration is after they hear it. Cause sometimes I'm like, cause I know what I'm thinking and why I thought about it, but I'm like, I'm curious what you think, just so then maybe we can combine it. And maybe that's what makes the story, you know, try not to like steal them. Yeah. Well, the wedding song you're saying?
Yes. Yes. What was it? What's the name of that song?
It's called Fish in the Sea, which I'll be releasing like later this year. But as you can tell from a lot of my music, I don't like to write a lot of sad songs, which I do have something. It's not sad. It's hopeful. Mm-hmm. I guess I don't write sad songs. I try to like leave it with a little bit of hope at the end. And I have a song called Lighthouse coming out April 14th. So I don't know when this is coming out, but next, or this Friday. Oh my gosh. But then just like with my wedding song, I wrote a couple, like three different choices. I played them for my parents. I played them at one of my shows and everybody voted on which one they liked the best. And there's two that were tied. But then my husband, who hadn't heard any of them yet, he said, because we got married in Mexico, he said, Aubrey, just, it's a fun party. So like, don't like kill the vibe or like make people cry. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay. So that's where
you know what he's really saying is, don't make me cry.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I think I would want that though. I'm like, maybe I should have done that so I could see him cry.
there's always another opportunity.
Yeah. But yeah, it's called Fish in the Sea and it's a fun little love song and he loves to fish. So that's where it kind of came from.
You know, I think I heard you play that at the
Festival.
Yeah. All right. Well, Aubrey Wallet, thank you so much. Anybody listening here can check you out at Aubrey Wallet, WOLLETT, AubreyWallet.com. And there's all
Facebook, kinds of stuff Instagram, there. YouTube, all the things.
Yep. Everywhere. Yeah, it's great. A lot of fun. And I think actually the happy music thing, you were just talking about, you and I have that in common. There's too much good to write about. And,
I agree.
To, try to counter all the sad songs out there. There's so many.
I agree.
Yeah.
I totally agree. It's way more fun to be happy than sad.
That's true. All right. Aubrey, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete. If you like what you hear, you can find Song Creating on your favorite podcast app or at songcreating.com. To check out my own music, go to steverobb.com. And until next time, keep a song in your head and music in your heart. Thanks for listening.